Welcome one and all to Last Stop Penn Station podcast featuring Carrie Silkin and Ian Riccoboni. They dive deep into Carrie's wealth of stories, and no subject is off limits. From the world of wrestling to his ticket agency, growing up in New Jersey, drug-fueled underground days, hustling in the French Quarter of New Orleans, and endless days and nights in New York City, every story is worth telling.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Last Stop Penn Station. I'm Ian Riccoboni, and I'm joined by our guest of honor, Carrie Silkin. Carrie, what a week it's been. What a reception, not only to the stories of Rush, but also the return of Ring of Honor with some new matches coming to television.
Yeah, that's truly the biggest story of the week. Not being in attendance broke my heart, but what warmed my heart was seeing how good not only the wrestling was, but the production was fantastic. Naturally, you and Caprice did a great job. But yeah, the production was great. I mean, it's really, with the current wrestling that's being broadcast, it's a bit of a different animal, and it's refreshing. Very sports-based. If you haven't had a chance to see it, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's available to anybody?
Anybody, yeah. ROHWrestling.com, and that's the current episode that aired this past week with Jay Lethal, Dalton Castle, Jonathan Gresham, and Wheeler Yuta. That's going to be available through the Monday that this comes out, and then on Monday, the episode flips over to the episode that airs over the weekends on Sinclair.
And who do we got coming up this Monday?
Yeah, we got David Finlay taking on Rocky Romero, so the son of Fit Finlay. David Finlay, fourth generation star, becoming a huge name in New Japan, takes on his mentor, Rocky Romero, in the first round. And then we have two good friends, two of our friends, who came up together, had their first match in Ring of Honor against each other in 2004, Matt Sydal and Delirious.
Yeah, it's crazy. For me, I can remember Delirious coming in. There was sort of a group of guys. There was a group of guys that sort of drove in from the St. Louis area. And no disrespect to Matt Sydal, he's one of the greats, but maybe it's because of Delirious's continuous run with Ring of Honor and Matt Sydal going to different places in his career and coming back that I forget about him, but so talented. So I'm certainly looking forward to this this Monday, and there's going to be another watch party.
Yeah, at 7 p.m. Log on to Twitter, use the hashtag ROHPure. Carrie, you and I were both on it last time. It was great to talk to all the fans, and Caprice was there, Quinn McKay, Jay Lethal, Dalton Castle, Jonathan Gresham, Wheeler Yuta, all the stars that were competing, and a lot of the other stars of Ring of Honor too. So that's going to be great to interact with everybody again.
Yeah, so if you're a fan, you can interact with the Ring of Honor stars. You know, it's nice to be back, and the product is great, and I'm really interested to see who's going to win this.
Yeah, it's I got a couple names. I like David Finlay. I said that on ROH Week by Week, and I think he's got a lot of potential. I think this could be his big breakout in Ring of Honor.
Well, did he have any matches prior?
He had a few. He had two, but then he messed up his elbow. Yeah, 2019. It was right as Nora was being born while we were waiting for the time to come. Atlanta and then in Charlotte. And I believe he had his elbow injury, his shoulder injury at that time. He made his debut, I believe, against Bandido.
Was it an Atlanta show that was like one of the first of the year?
Or was it another one? It was the night that Lifeblood was formed.
Well, I met him.
There you go.
I met him. I saw him. Sorry, Dave. But yeah.
And him and Juice, our good friend Juice Robinson, had a big win in the Tokyo Dome earlier this year. So
yeah, and talk about a lineage, a family history with Dave Finlay.
Yeah. You brought Fit Finlay into Ring of Honor, or Sinclair did.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, a lot of good stuff going on. Not to mention the fantasy draft tournament.
Wow.
Rearing its head.
We got a lot of good response on that. Great commissioning, if I must say.
Oh, thank you.
And there was a winner. And what was really interesting was that Bobby Cruz believed the winner was Caprice Coleman. Caprice Coleman believed the winner was Caprice Coleman. But there was two sets of votes. Carrie, there was a vote on Twitter, which about 500 people voted in, and they selected Caprice Coleman by about 36%. And then there was the YouTube voting of 2,000 votes, where 56% of the 2,000 selected.
And Bobby Cruz is not demanding a recount. Is this a situation like the Bush election in Florida?
There were no hanging chads. There's no electoral dispute, I don't think. Todd Sinclair has joined me in certifying the results as two-fourths of the party. But it was interesting. The voting right on YouTube was there in plain sight, and poor Bobby didn't see it, I guess.
Well, congratulations, my man.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun, and there's going to be more historic items like that coming to the Ring of Honor YouTube page soon. But we talk about history. My hometown, Allentown, Pennsylvania, I'm always curious to hear about it. And that's where we left off last time, Carrie, where you were about to meet Rush, the Canada's greatest progressive rock band.
I had met them.
You'd already met them.
York at the Palladium.
Yep, and you were about to see them again, just 90 miles west.
Yeah, my friend at that point, Whitey, who drove the bus actually drove Rush's bus, as we told you in the last episode. They were driving just like the road crew did. That's how the tour was set up. And Whitey just told me, look, when we're around, you know, just come. And which is easier said than done. Mm-hmm. Because there were no cell phones, although I'll get into a story possibly on this episode where I figured out a way to get hold of a band member, not necessarily a band member, but someone who works for a band at a venue before a show. But that's another story. But in this case, I didn't have that, or I didn't think of this. So the Rush show in the Palladium was May-ish of 1980, and he did give me a schedule.
Oh, okay.
So I saw on the schedule that they were playing in Allentown, and I was not living in this area. This is years before I moved to this area, but I knew where Allentown was. And they were at the fairgrounds, mm-hmm. but it was late September.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I didn't know if the fair was going on or it wasn't going on. It wasn't really, I figured it probably was going on. Mm-hmm. So I grabbed my friend Joe McGovern, and I got some party favors.
Now, does a guy like Joe know this is going on? Is he?
Oh yeah. Hip
to, okay. Just yeah.
yeah. Joe was one of my best friends, and he was a rock and roller. And once again, neither of us were huge Rush fans, but this was the time when Spirit of the Radio and Limelight and Tom Sawyer mm-hmm. were breaking out. And, you know, these were big FM radio songs. So I get my package. And once again, we make the disclaimer that I'm sort of glorifying this, but this is not a good thing to do drugs, number one, let alone trying to sell drugs.
to major rock artists.
Or to anybody.
To anybody, yeah.
And, you know, driving with these drugs, and it is so... although these stories say we want them to be fun and we want you to enjoy them, this is not something that we are recommending you right. do. But this is history, and this is just what happened. And so we're going to tell the stories as they happened. So there we are. It was a midweek show, and must have left the Union County area probably 1:30 in the afternoon. I knew enough that we had to get there early because I had to figure out a way to find Whitey. Mm-hmm. The only guy from Rush that I had met, if you remember. And if you're a new listener to Last Stop Penn Station, please subscribe, and you can go back. Because when I met Whitey at the Palladium, and I was on the bus with him, and they were doing their sound check, and the only guy that came on the bus, the sound check ended, was Neil Peart. Hmm. And we had this is in New York, the big pile of cocaine. It's like, once again, it's like I'm in his living room.
Yeah.
And he was totally cool. As I said in the last episode, the only thing I knew what to say to him was, nice to meet you. Would you like a little? And he's like, oh, maybe later, you know, after the show. But and then he scooted off. And it wasn't like, oh my God, it's Keith Moon. Mm. Oh my God, it's John Bonham, right?
Right.
You know, I knew he's just a great drummer, but didn't have that rock star humming a.
Like if I would have run into Bruce or.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or suddenly Mick Jagger walked on the bus.
Sure.
But anyway, off we go to Allentown, and we arrive at the fairgrounds.
Didn't go to Hess's. Hess's department store first.
No.
Didn't make a stop there. Didn't get a.
No. No.
Okay.
We weaved our way through the tawdry streets of Allentown. I'm sure we were using an old school, you know, they had these things called road maps. Right? AJ, our producer, our fine producer AJ is old enough to remember a road map. And I even think you are.
I am, yeah. Used them quite a bit. Yeah.
Yes. Even my friend, our friend Eric, who helps us with some of these notes and some of the technical stuff. I think even he's old enough to know about a road map. But some of you younger people
may not have used one.
Right.
It's essentially a paper version of the GPS, but you have to find your location and figure out your own route.
Which, do you remember? Well, of course you can remember. Before the GPS, you could sort of print out directions.
MapQuest, yeah.
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
They would always, for me at least, my experience was when I tried to do that, they were often inaccurate.
Right.
And sending, you know, you'd be getting off a highway and suddenly you're in the middle of a neighborhood, right?
Yeah,
just to get you back to the main road that it should have put you on right off the highway.
Yeah, or send you down a one-way street that it didn't know was a one-way street.
Right.
Yeah.
So we had our road map. We navigated our way. And there's the Allentown Fairgrounds. And getting there at 3 in the afternoon, there was basically no one there.
Hmm.
Excuse me. And I see the grandstand, and everything's fenced.
Hmm.
And parked the car. And I'm like, how am I going to get to these guys? Because there's a lot of area. You're familiar with this.
Yeah.
AJ is familiar with this. There's a lot of area behind the grandstand that the trucks and the buses have access to, but they're nowhere near the road.
Right.
So it's not like it's stand by the fence and go, yo, Whitey, I'm here.
I have a question. I don't think we hit this last time. Is Whitey's nickname Whitey because he liked the white stuff? Or
no.
Okay. Just making sure.
He was just Whitey.
Just Whitey. Okay.
And the only other guy I had met was this guy, Howard, the lighting guy. So point being is that the fences of entrance for these trucks and buses, you know where they were? It was, you know where the main gate bar
and
club is? It was the other side.
Okay. That's tricky to get to.
What would that be? The west entrance?
Yes. Near the hospital.
Well, or no.
Closer. Oh, no.
The hospital is where that main gate place is.
Yes.
So it was the other side.
Oh, okay.
So that it was just all fenced. So we went around to the other side and you could see the buses and the trucks. You know, it was like you were in the Sahara Desert dying for you. It's like an oasis. You know, they were like as far away as you could be. You know, so there's a guy at the gate, local worker, and now I've got to tell him a story. But it wasn't like there was a ton of Rush fans standing around. It was early. Mm-hmm. There might have been a couple of fans hoping to see the Rush band come in limos. Little did they know they had driven in on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So whoever the guy at the gate was, I say to this guy, excuse me. And I had no credentials. How old was I then? I was like 24. So here's this 24-year-old guy talking to another. He was a younger man. I said, I'm friends with one of the drivers from Rush. I knew not to say, oh, I'm friends with the band. But,
yeah.
I said, can I go in and try to find him? He's expecting me. I said, and I remember saying this to him. I go, look, I'm my buddy that's with me, I'll leave him hostage with you.
Yeah.
I go, I'm not. So the guy was like, go ahead. Right?
Nice.
But he only let me go.
Yeah.
So off I go. I'm walking as fast as I can to get to this area, and I see Howard, the lighting guy, and it was just dumb luck. And I said, where's Whitey? He goes, he's on the bus. And you know, Howard was happy to see me because he knew what I had.
You were like rock and roll Santa at that point.
At that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So Howard's like, oh, he's a, let me get him. So Howard, I don't know if he knocked on the door or the bus dude. There was just, and boom, there's Whitey.
Mm.
And he was a really nice guy. Forgetting about the reason I was there and why he was happy to see me. There's a number of reasons, but in general, he was a really nice guy. So he's like, hey, man, oh, it's good to see you. I'm glad you came out. And I said, yeah, and I have some stuff. He's all right, good. I said, look, but my buddy is by the gate. Do you think there's any way? He goes, yeah, hang on. So he gives me the plastic laminate, like the all access, and he gives a regular extra backstage pass, you know, the stick on.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, go ahead, go get your friend and come back. I'm like, yeah, all right. So I run back and there's Joe waiting, and I thank the guy at the gate and I give Joe the pass, and the guy lets us in, and we go back to Whitey, and it was a similar situation. The sound check was just probably by now is around 3:30, maybe 4 o'clock. So Whitey lets us on the bus. I introduce him to Joe. And Whitey says to me, he goes, "Oh, you're lucky." He goes, "Everyone got paid last night."
Oh, okay.
So that was good. So I'm in the, once again, in the front lounge of the bus. And Whitey makes a substantial purchase. And the rest of the road crew and the band were now doing the sound check. Mm-hmm. And so he says, "Look, when these guys are done with sound check, I'm sure some of them are going to, if you have more, he says, "I'm sure some of them are going to want some." I'm like, "All right, cool." So he goes, "Yeah, relax." So we're sitting there on the bus and we're doing a few lines and we're just talking and I'm really not paying attention, but the sound check ends. And the first person to come to the bus is Alex Lifeson. Now, I had met Neil Peart in New York, just hello, goodbye. I don't know why the other guys didn't get it, but I didn't see Neil Peart and I didn't see Geddy Lee. But Alex Lifeson gets on the bus and Whitey introduces myself and Joe to him, and he shakes our hands. It's a good thing there wasn't coronavirus.
Right. Yeah.
Like normal.
Yeah. Small quarters there. I mean,
right. So once again, I was nervous because even though Whitey told me everything's cool, I'm sitting in this guy's house, the bus. And there's this big pile of cocaine. So I said the same thing that I said to Neil Peart, to Alex Lifeson. I said, "Would you like some, man?" And he's like, "Yeah, I would, but after the show." So
that's a very polite gesture. Just you have good manners, Carrie.
And as opposed to Neil Peart, who said the same, basically exactly the same thing, and then he moseyed to the back. Alex Lifeson stayed in the front, and we're sitting there, and he reaches under the, there's like a table, two chairs, and a couch, and he reaches under the couch, and he pulls out an acoustic guitar, right? And he straps it on and he starts playing this, like, all I could, like, very almost classical guitar stuff, not even folkish, not rock and roll. I couldn't identify it, but it was really intricate stuff. And he was just and that caused the conversation to go dead silent. You know, I didn't want to be talking, you know, and I was sort of following Whitey's lead. And he was playing for like, I don't know, 10 minutes, you know, and we didn't want to interrupt him. And then when he was done, I was like, "Man, that was really cool." He goes, "Oh, yeah, thank you." I said, "Yeah, I saw you guys at the Palladium." Mm-hmm. I'm telling him the story. I met Whitey through when he was working with the Fabulous Poodles, and he goes, "Ah, good." He goes, "I hope you." He goes, "How'd you enjoy the show?" I go, "It's great. You know, it was excellent," and it was. So, at that point, it was time to get out of the way, and. I said, "Well, it's nice meeting you. Maybe I'll see you after the show." He goes, "Well, I hope I do." Right? Okay. So we have the passes, and Whitey takes us over to some of these other road crew guys. There was a trailer set up that was like an after show party area to come, you know, since they didn't have like a proper room. Mm-hmm. And he brings us in there, and I meet some of these other road crew guys to do these little transactions. And everyone was nice and just after that was done, we go, all right, well, look, we'll see after the show. Mm-hmm. So when we left them, it was probably now around 6 o'clock. So there was nowhere to go except we could go into the fairground area. We didn't even have tickets. We just had the passes. Mm. So I think people were just starting to come in. Maybe it was 6:30. Mm-hmm. So the fans are filtering in. And it wasn't a completely sold out show. We went and sat up in the grandstand. And I know you have, thankfully, have no familiarity with the horrible cocaine. But once you start doing it, you just want to keep doing it. Now we're in the stands. But I had the all-access pass. Poor Joe didn't. So by about 7 o'clock, I'm starting to jones for another hit. And I said, Joe, I'll be right back. Because I was able to go back to the gate. And go back. And, you know, it's like no one's going to stop me. And poor Joe had to sit there. He was guzzling beers because, you know, it's when you do coke, it's like you go up, but then you want to come down. So, and you could pretty much drink as much as possible. Oh, it's very hard to kill it.
Ooh.
But and plus Joe wanted to do more. Mm. But, you know, we're in the grandstand and we don't, you know, want to get in any trouble. And anyway, there was no opening act, and Rush came on time. They don't do a super long show. It wasn't a Grateful Dead or a Pearl Jam marathon. Oh. Thank God. They did like a real tight, you know, hour and 50 minute set.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fantastic. So when the show was over, and poor Joe is just, oh yeah, and there was one other time, like about 15 minutes into the show, I went back. Yeah, I felt bad for Joe. I gave him some, but he was too paranoid. You know,
is that one of the side effects?
Oh yeah,
paranoia.
Oh yeah.
What do they want? How else do you feel? You talk about wanting to feel higher and higher. You feel paranoid. You feel anxious. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's coffee, but at a 400 time multiplier.
Yes. and once you do it, it's a terrible drug because you get so juiced up, and then you know you just want to keep that.
Oh God!
You know, and once too many. Then here's the thing, and this goes for any kind of drugs, drinking, whatever. I mean, marijuana. One's too many, and a thousand's never enough.
Yeah,
that old expression. So the show's over, and Joe's like, "Thank God!"
So even if this would have been Joe's favorite band, it sounds like the coke would have made him just not enjoy what he was doing.
Exactly. Oy. Right. Which leads me to a side story. I might have told it on the podcast. Oh well, if I did, I did. I'll tell again quickly. I was at a Neil Young Crazy Horse show at the Garden.
Oh yeah.
And
This was, I think, during one of our romps through 85 and 86.
Right. Yeah. And they cut off the beer.
Right.
And instead of me staying and enjoying, you know, it was like probably 2/3 through the show, enjoying the grand finale of this Neil Young and his best songs.
Yeah.
I chose to leave.
All right.
So, yeah. So anyway, we get through the gate and we go to the back. So now this trailer that had been the aforementioned trailer that had been set up for these the after show. I guess there was whatever local radio people and some friends of theirs.
The great Ken Matthews of Laser 104.1.
Or what was that? The Bear Man and
the
Keith.
The Bear Man and Keith. They weren't around yet. Or Ken Matthews. But close. We were getting close to when they started.
And yeah. Then there had to be some, probably some radio promotions for people.
KXW was around at that time. And yeah, I'm sure the Philly station, WZZO, was about to get started.
Right. And it was probably advertised also. I don't think they were doing Philly. That's why they did Allentown.
They always, you know, these bands usually do pretty well up here because they do usually skip Philly and they do usually come do the big outdoor show at the fair. And it's a choice and it's advertised on Channel 69 locally. And it's advertised in the morning call and people still read the local paper and still watch the local news here.
Yes, so in Allentown, Lehigh Valley is a classic rock.
It is
a haven. I mean, if you put on ZZO, you know they have playing Judas Priest like it just came out.
Day.
Def Leppard, like it just came out. But so we go in the back and we go to the trailer, and there, you know. The only person I'm like really comfortable with is Whitey. You know, this Howard guy who I got to know a little, he's breaking down, you know, he's with the road crew. I mean, yeah. He's a lighting man, but it's not like when it's done, like he's a, I do the lights and then I walk away.
Yeah.
You know, he's part of the crew. So Whitey was a cool enough guy that says, listen, when the show, and I'd seen him like twice during it. He goes, when it's over, he goes, I'll be near the gate. So when you guys come through. So I'm not, it's like, otherwise I'd have went through the gate and I'm like, you know, where should I go? Should I go to the bus? Should I go to the trailer? Despite my laminated pass, I'm still nervous. So there's Whitey. And he's like, come on. So he takes us into the trailer and very spacious. And I don't know how big it was, probably the length of where we're sitting now through to the Death Before Dishonor poster.
It's pretty long. Yeah.
And it had some compartments and some doors.
Mm-hmm.
So Whitey says to me, hey, I think Neil and Alex want to see you. I go, oh, yeah, sure. So he gets Neil Peart and Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee.
Oh, all three.
All three.
Yeah.
And we go to the there was a very back room to this trailer that was like the VIP room where, you know, and we go in the back and I just said, hey, would you guys like some? They're like, yeah.
And you're gesticulating like you've just put it on the table.
Right. Yeah. And we're now I'm telling them how great how good the show was. And I said, I remember saying something about the lighting because it was really good. And I forget which guy from Rush it was, but he's like, oh, yeah, I know that fucking Howard. You know, they had something. But they were really nice. And we do a bunch of lines. And Whitey says to me, hey, you still have more? I go, yeah. He goes, I think Neil wants to buy some. So I go, well, you talk to him. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to. So I'm like making believe I'm not watching.
Yeah.
And Whitey comes back with a couple $100 and he gives it to me. And I gave him the stuff. And I don't know who bought it, but whatever. So we go back out to the with all these other people.
Well, before we do that, because they're rock stars, it could go one of two ways. You either say, well, yeah, they're good for it, and the price goes up.
Nah.
Or, they're rock stars. I hope to see these people again. The price goes down. Or do you give them the fair market?
I gave them fair market value.
That's okay.
You know, I knew these guys, you know, these guys were doing very well. I think their album was like in the top 10.
For almost a year, I think, at that
right.
point.
So we go back out to the, with all these other people. And, you know, we're drinking and we're talking to some of these random people. And I'm not really paying attention. And the guys from the band are talking to this one. And there's an autograph thing. And not particularly paying attention to them. And all of a sudden, I feel someone put their arm around me. And it was Neil Peart.
Oh.
And he puts his arm around me. He goes, hey, man. He goes, thanks a lot. He goes, that was good. So.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were really, 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 really nice people. Great band, great musician. And I noticed online in between our last episode and this episode that it was the, is it right to say the anniversary of Neil Peart's death?
Yeah.
It was this last, you know, over the last few days.
Yeah. It's, incredibly underrated in terms of drummers.
You think he was underrated?
I think he's one of the classic overrated for the wrong things. Just, you know, so many people think of having this huge kit as like this big, you know, thing. But I think he's underrated just in terms of his ability to switch time signatures and just some of the prog elements that they had that he really excelled at.
Well, I noticed online, and you're not going to know this name, AJ Might, from me dragging AJ to 800 Jethro Tull concerts. But the drummer who was with Tull from 84 through 2011, his name is Doan Perry. And he was one of the only Americans ever in Tull. And, well, he had a tribute it's on Facebook. He had a tribute to Neil Peart, and he was friends with him and was just talking about what a nice man he was and how talented he was. And, you know, Doan Perry got the job with Jethro Tull.
No.
He lived in like Westchester County, and there was an ad in the Village Voice that said pro band needs drummer. And he answered the ad, and he was told to go to a studio in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, what band is this? And they didn't, whoever was running goes, well, it doesn't matter. We just auditioning people. It's a recording act.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out that there was an ad run in the Village Voice, in the Melody Maker, you know, mm-hmm. that in London.
Yeah.
And whatever the LA music newspaper was. And they took the three best guys and they flew them to the UK. And Doan got the gig that way.
Wow.
And before he flew, he found out, oh, this is for Jethro Tull.
Oh, wow.
And he had been a big fan. But so Neil Peart, maybe underrated. And the other thing about Rush is there aren't many bands that are just three people,
right,
that can come out with a sound like these guys do.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll bring up ZZ Top and say, oh, how do you compare ZZ Top? Well, ZZ Top's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And but the point is, or the Police is.
Right.
You know, so for three guys to do what, but the Rush's sound and to recreate it live.
Yeah.
Just fantastic. So that was my Allentown story. There's another leg of the Rush story, but it was as great as that night was. They were playing at NASA Coliseum maybe a year later.
Yeah.
And I went out there hoping to make magic happen. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get to anyone. The buses and trucks were buried inside the arena.
That's a schlep, too.
Right.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work out. But, yeah, that was my brush with Rush.
Your brush. It sounds like great people and sounds like... It sounds like a lot of fun was had at the Allentown. Did you go to Hess's afterward, at least? Is it?
No.
You didn't go
and
to
nor did I go. What's the name of the ice cream barbecue place?
Oh, the Ritz. Oh, rest in peace, the Ritz, recently closed.
Because we're not hungry when you do that.
Really?
Yeah. No.
Oh, wow.
No. So I didn't even do that. But Whitey did something else for me. He asked me, in an effort to help my career in this, my vocation with the drugs, a horrible vocation. He said to me, "Hey, what bands are coming around New York City?" He goes, "I know a lot of the road crew people from different, not everybody, but who's coming around?"
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to think, you know, like who I've heard is being advertised. And I mentioned Bob Seger. I go, Bob Seger. I goes, "Oh, Bob Seger." He goes, "Listen, I know Lurch." Lurch was one of the drivers. "I know their sound man, Hot Sam."
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
So he's writing these names. He's writing the names down. I go, "Well, Genesis is coming. This is post-gate, you know."
Yeah, right after Phil Collins takes over as the lead.
But they were still good. They were still really good. And he's like, "I don't, you know, there was some he knew, some he didn't." And for some reason, he knew one. Oh, he knew drivers. That was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, I mentioned Tull. And he goes, "Yeah, there's a guy named... BR. I go, "BR?" "He's a driver." I go, "Yeah." So I said, "They're coming like in October to the Garden." He goes, "Yeah, BR's with Tull." And I'm trying to, he gave me a list to the best of his ability. It included Thin Lizzy. Because of the driver.
Okay.
He didn't know anyone in Thin Lizzy, but I said, "Oh, yeah, there's a Thin Lizzy Blue Oyster Cult." He goes, "Oh, yeah, rattles off some name, like, you know, Sneaky Pete's one of their drivers." Right?
Did you ever get to meet Phil Lynott?
Well, yes, I did, actually.
Wow.
Among the names, I tried to jot them down, but Thin Lizzy, he knew. All right, well, we'll do them. We'll start them slow here. Yes, I went to the Blue Oyster Cult Thin Lizzy show, which was at the Palladium.
Okay.
Now, this is another trick I learned, which is like, you don't have to be, it was always the same guy by the back gate.
Okay.
So I think it might have been at that show. Mm-hmm. I figured, ooh, if I get friendly with this guy, or I give him something,
yeah,
no matter who's playing,
right,
he'll probably let me in.
Right.
So I go to the Blue Oyster Cult Thin Lizzy show. Now, Blue Oyster Cult's a Long Island band. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Yeah.
I thought they might have been from the UK. I never thought about where they were from.
Yeah. And Thin Lizzy, we don't do our research here, but the boys are back in town.
Jailbreak.
Tonight there's going to be a jailbreak.
Yeah, I mean, Rosalie.
Those had to be around that
whiskey
time.
Whiskey in the Jar. Soldier of Fortune. Yeah.
Well, what I'm trying to ask you or trying to say
is they were established by then for sure.
Right. But it wasn't like those songs. I mean,
they're about 3 years out from that being monster hits. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were there a couple nights. And I believe Blue Oyster Cult was actually the feature.
Wow.
You know, Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, I went and I found this driver, and he wanted something, and he says to me, here, I'll take you in. I'm sure some of the guys in the band, you know, they all used, wow, most of them,
yeah,
you know, or at least it appeared they did. So I'm backstage at the Palladium, and I meet Phil Lynott, and they didn't have a lot of money, though.
Interesting.
You know, the road crew guys had more money, and Phil Lynott, he wasn't really interested in the coke. He says to me, "Do you have any dope?"
Hmm.
And he wasn't talking about marijuana.
Oh.
Right. He's talking about heroin.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. He goes, "Well, do you know where we could get some?"
Hmm.
This is like 4 p.m. Now, that was not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to be a cool guy, and I was not bowled over by Phil Lynott at all, as far as, you know, this rock star. You
yeah.
know, he was just this guy, and I knew these songs. I go, well, we're pretty close to this neighborhood. Now, the Lower East Side, Alphabet City.
Yeah.
Which you must have a little familiarity with.
Absolutely. I lived on 3rd and 12th for a year, which is a little bit toward the center, but I've
Well, familiar. If you would have seen what Alphabet City, now those who are listening in New York, the Lower East Side, there's this hunk of land to the east side of First Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so since they had gone from 12th Avenue to First Avenue, this small, like, mile long and mile wide that was unto itself, they made an Avenue A, mm-hmm, Avenue B, C, D, and there were these other streets. Mixed in with that, mm-hmm, was the famous, not the garment district in the 30s, but like Hester Street,
yes,
where they had, yeah, the wholesale clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of very ethnic neighborhoods, these
Absolutely.
Jewish neighborhoods.
Eastern European neighborhoods. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. So me, 24-year-old, trying to be Mr. Cool, Mr. New York, I'm like, well, they sell it like by this Alphabet City. He goes, well, how far is it? I go, it's probably like a mile. But I didn't know where to go or who to go to. But I had been there before with a friend of mine. And I know this is going to sound hard to believe, but there were streets like second, third, fourth street between Avenue B and Avenue C that were such an abundance of drugs being sold that people would line up. And stick money through a hole.
Oh, geez.
Yes.
Wow.
Right. And they would be shouting out brand names.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like Superstar, White Lightning, Bam-ba-dam, whatever. And you wouldn't get ripped off because these guys that are running it wouldn't allow a ripoff.
Oh, okay.
So all I could do was go down there, you know. I said, I think I know where we could get it. I go, but I don't know any specifically. Well, he wanted to go.
Really?
Yeah. He wanted to go.
Crap. Okay.
So he goes up to his one of the road managers or one of his management people.
Yeah.
And he gets a $100 bill. I go, bro, you should probably break it down, like get like, you know, smaller.
Right.
Because I knew, you know, if you're going to be sticking money through a hole.
Yeah.
There were guys I saw on the street. So I took him down there and I just asked someone. I go, who's got the bed? They would yell C and D, coke and dope.
Okay.
I go, where's her good D? He goes, and the guy says to me, where the line's the biggest.
Wow.
So I'm nervous.
Yeah.
And there's Phil Lynott standing on line.
Platinum Records.
Right. Standing on line. He did it.
Wow.
You know, I got him back to the Palladium.
Holy,
you know,
crap.
This whole trip probably only took like 45 minutes.
Wow.
I got him back to the Palladium and they were good that night.
Yeah, they would have been. That was the Gary Moore years and he was playing guitar with them.
Oh, yeah. That's another, they're talking about an unsung unsung hero.
Even some of his solo stuff too was great. I can't believe I wouldn't get in a car with a stranger now. I'm 33 years old. And he just walked right. You guys walked down or did you take a taxi?
We took a cab.
Holy crap.
You know, what's a cab going to be from Second Avenue?
Probably even in today's money, $10. Not that much.
Yeah, probably have been like $4.
Yeah.
And it's like it looked like Beirut down there. No disrespect to Beirut, but that's how it looked.
Yeah, that's an area that's been gentrified recently and it's been, you know, quote unquote, cleaned up. It lost a lot of its character, but.
Yeah, but that wasn't a good scene down there. So I got him back there and I met the guys in Blue Oyster Cult also. There's no real story.
Yeah.
Was it a successful night for business? I don't know. But they played the next night. And now I went back.
Yeah.
Right? And it was sort of sad because Phil Lynott didn't have any more money.
Oh.
And he wanted to go back. You know, and whoever his management was.
Wouldn't give him another advance.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And when did he die?
I think 85 or 86.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't too long after that.
Right.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Talk about a run-in. One, some good ones with Rush and a nice encounter with Phil Lynott also. So we're getting to about that time, Carrie. We're just under an hour. But I think we owe the people something. We talked about the Great Allentown Fair and the fairgrounds. Because you told the story from 1980 I'd like to take you back to 1984.
Okay.
When a Scottish English man named Rod Stewart.
Oh, that. Now, wait. what's that in I'm going to totally. What's that odd form of Catholicism? Is it
repenting?
I'm gonna get in trouble with everybody. You can't say anything more.
Well, no,
where they whip themselves.
Geez.
In the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, the listeners will tell us.
In the Da Vinci Code, they're so strict where they whip themselves. Yeah. So I'm whipping myself right now because we left the people hanging.
We did, but that's okay.
With Ian Riccoboni's mom and Rod Stewart.
Yes. So we tell your great stories and you have a great degree of confidence because you live them. With full disclaimer, this is one that my mother and her sister have told secondhand. So there's going to be maybe some question marks. And if Shelley, if you're listening to this, I love you. But you've never given me the full and honest true story at this
point. Now, what year were you born?
I was born in 1987. So
okay.
So
you were minus three.
I was minus three. My brother was five at this point. And imagine me with blonde hair. And that's my mom. You know, she's about 6 feet tall. So that's what my mom looked like in 1984. Rod Stewart had just come out with Infatuation. They covered Some Guys Have All the Luck that year and All Right Now by Free.
And wasn't Do You Think I'm Sexy? Was that?
That had been out, yeah.
Right.
And what's odd about all of this is that I am a huge Rod Stewart fan. Non-ironically,
well, look at
the Faces.
The body of work he had with the Faces,
yeah,
as well as
Maggie May.
Every picture tells a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm interrupting you. Go ahead, please.
So I'm a huge, huge fan. And then one day I find out, as I buy Every Picture Tells a Story on vinyl, I'm about 14 years old. I start to collect records and I come home with Every Picture Tells a Story. My mom said, you know, at the Allentown Fair, I was alone with Rod Stewart and your aunt broke it up. And the story goes, Rod Stewart, to this day, Carrie, you mentioned there's two ways to speak to a rock star and to get their attention. One of the ways is to present them with party favors, as you mentioned.
Right.
The other is to be open to engaging them physically. And so...
Which in 99% of the cases means you need to be a lady.
Right. So... Rod Stewart allegedly had a cue to his road team. He's a big soccer fan. And we talked about when he would come to Allentown, they do this big charity game with the radio DJs from Allentown.
That's amazing.
Philly and New York. And they'd run around J. Bernie Crump Stadium and they'd play soccer. And they would take pictures and it'd be on the news and they'd raise thousands of dollars, you know, $2,000, $3,000 for various charities. And it was a good thing he did for Allentown. But he also brought soccer balls on stage. Can you guess why he brought soccer balls on stage?
Well, I've seen Rod Stewart.
Yeah.
And one of the gimmicks towards the end of the show was he would kick them off the stage and it would, I if I remember correctly, and it would give, like, you know, there'd be enough of them bouncing around and it was
sure.
a good visual. Or was there another reason?
Well, there's another reason. And at the time, he would only kick a handful and it wasn't, you know, later he'd probably kick 30 or 40. But in 1984, he kicked about 3 to 4.
I could see where this is going. Go ahead.
And it was to indicate to his road crew who he found attractive in the audience.
Well, did he hand the ball?
No, he would kind of do a chip shot to folks he could see, because you've been on stage, you've been in a Ring of Honor ring. You know it's difficult to see maybe beyond the first two or three rows when the big lights and things and in the Allentown Fair would be no different because they had a huge lighting ring.
Right.
So, yeah. So my mother was a recipient of one of the soccer balls. She caught it straight up. And it was not only kicked toward her, but she caught it. She was asked to come backstage. And as family lore and family legend goes, she had met Rod Stewart at that point, and she took her back, and I think my mom found him sexy, to answer the question. But as the family legend and lore goes, my Aunt Kathy was the one to end that encounter, either out of jealousy or sensing what was about to happen.
You said your brother was how old?
My brother was 5.
Mom was a married lady?
No, no. Oh. My mom was single and ready to mingle. She'd meet my dad in about 18 months after that.
Well, you got to explain this more with the brother.
Sure. Yeah. Brother. That's okay. Brother was born in Georgia from my mom's first marriage. She was 16 when there she was married the first time. So she was only 21, 22 at the time of the concert. So she was pretty young yet. And Rod the Mod or Rod the Bod or whatever nickname you want to give him. Apparently, was interested in Miss Shelley Warnett at that point.
So no other information has been dispensed.
This is a family mystery that's all that my mom has been willing to share. It's almost as mysterious as the time my dad's band opened up for Head East by accidentally giving themselves the name of a more popular band that they didn't know was a popular band. And they were on the bill anyway, thinking that they were, the promoter thought they were somebody else.
Okay.
Yeah. And my dad won't tell me what band name that is. So a lot of musical mysteries in the Riccoboni family.
Well, we're going to have to dig deeper. For all of our many listeners to Last Stop Penn Station, I'm putting Ian Riccoboni on the spot right now that, next time he, it's the right opportunity to speak with his mom.
Yeah.
Maybe he could,
I can record it.
Well, we don't need that, but maybe his mom will, give a little more detail.
Yeah. We need to,
if maybe there isn't any.
Yeah. Maybe it ended there, but you know, I'm curious because it's always kind of been, there's always been a sisterly butting of the heads. I think maybe my mom was an interested party and I don't know if my aunt was jealous or if she was just looking out for her little sister. So that would be an interesting point of view to find out.
Well, nevertheless, the Allentown Fair.
It's where magic happens.
Whether it's the 27-inch woman, whether it's Rod Stewart, whether it's the world's fattest pig, anything can happen there. Maybe it's the Bozo Bounce. Maybe it's Howard Huge. and for, you know what? Maybe when your mom left that night, as fair tradition goes, just like the man that ran the booth when I saw the drug addict, as your mom was leaving, maybe Rod Stewart spit on the floor and said, "Glad you enjoyed it." Or maybe your mom said that,
right,
to him.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Oh, man. I was a couple hours away from being Rod Stewart. Who knows? Rod Stewart Jr. Who knows?
All right. Well, Last Stop Penn Station. You never know what you're going to hear. If this is the first time you've bumped into us, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. We have on Pro Wrestling Tees the popular Last Stop Penn Station t-shirt, as well as the Camel t-shirt. I'm researching back, you know, I know an old ticket hustler, this guy Spiro, who's AJ's met, who works a half price line, used to, and you know, he's out of business like everyone in the ticket business is now, but I brought up the Camel to him because Spiro has been, Spiro, who's my age, I mean, I started working the streets for tickets in 85, 86. Spiro was around since the mid 70s, like when he was a kid. So I believe there may be another Camel story coming.
Really?
Like so I'm going to keep digging with Spiro. But As we're doing all this rock and roll stuff, I have a very interesting Bob Seger. I did follow up some of Whitey's leads, mm-hmm. and I did get to meet up with Bob Seger, and I had to follow the Jethro Tull lead.
Right.
And there are some stories there, not to mention UFO,
wow.
Michael Schenker.
Yeah.
A brief meeting with Rob Halford.
Oh.
Very brief. And Molly Hatchet.
Did Rob Halford, was he all in leather? Was that a gimmick? Am I thinking of the right guy, first of all? Jewish priest?
Wait a minute. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He was in leather on stage. I don't know about afterwards.
Okay.
But yeah, we have some other stories. We have some more rock and roll stories of this debauchery, and we'll be happy to release those to you on an upcoming episode.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Bob Seger sounds good. Maybe we'll start there next time. We'll start with some Detroit Muscle.
I was teasing you guys. If you remember some of our group text, I mentioned double A, double E, double I, double O. We may have to interrupt the rock.
Okay.
To just hear the strange tale of double O.
Double O. Okay.
And his friend, Frosty Freeze.
Wow. Okay. Now I'm curious.
So
that's a good cliffhanger. So can't wait to hear those. We'll hear those next week. And more. I'm sure we'll talk about Rod. Maybe we'll have a follow-up on Rod Stewart. We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll do my best to do some digging. But for Carrie Silk and I'm Ian Riccoboni, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Last Stop Penn Station.
We hail you for listening to Last Stop Penn Station podcast. Rate, review, like, subscribe, and share on your favorite platform. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or at laststoppennstation.com.